Oh, the conversations we have before the red light goes on. In John Logan's Tony Award-winning play, Red, iconoclastic Mark Rothko, the abstract expressionist painter, confronts his decision to accept a lucrative commercial commission, extolling the virtues of his art as expressing the big emotions, tragedy, ecstasy, and doom. Rothko drills his new assistant about the about the dangers of selling out as they work together. The roles of student and teacher reverse, forcing Rothko to face his own demons about reality and his ultimate place in the pantheon of great artists. Our good friend Kevin McGuire plays Mark Rothko. David Kenner plays Rothko's assistant, Ken, and both join us in Studio A this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Good to see you again.
That's good,
Kevin.
To see you, Joe.
Yeah, always a pleasure. What have you been up to?
Oh, well, besides Red,
yeah.
I finished a run of Donnybrook in New York at the Irish Repertory Theater on March 31st and came to Albany on April 1st.
Excellent.
And we rehearsed in New York for a week because I was doing that show there.
So I saw the show when it was on Broadway, mm-hmm. and it was it was one of those shows that you think just theater was invented for. It's just a great theatrical piece.
It is.
The two of you both get to have wonderful moments, and it's gripping and just an incredible work of art.
I would agree with that. And what I love about it is that it brings all these artistic sensibilities together. I mean, I think the music is incredibly important.
Yep.
I don't know if I've ever done a play where the lighting is so important. Also, I believe the climax of the play is when we paint the canvas and it's silent. There's so many unique things about this theatrical experience and this journey that this play takes you on that I think it's quite fascinating. And then, of course, the craft of language and the art itself. I mean, studio painting. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. When I saw it in New York, I felt the same way. I mean, I thought, oh my God, it's just a wonderful coming together of all of those things. Wouldn't you say, David?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's also a great story. You know, the two journeys that they have and the way that they find themselves and each other and they cross. It's the action and the you know, very humanistic story as well. Yeah.
And both men are pushing each other for information and ultimately mm-hmm. some solace, I guess.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's very interesting.
How did you come to it?
Well, I saw it in New York and thought, oh my God, I want to do this. And then I thought, well, I'm never going to do this. I'm not an Eastern European Jew. And but they've solved that problem at Cap Rep by giving me brown eyes and cutting my hair and dyeing it black and all sorts of things and shaving me. I looked like an Irishman when I got here, and now I look like what I'm supposed to in some strange way.
Yeah.
And although Alfred Molina and I have a lot, there are a lot of similarities. He's Irish and Spanish, and, you know, he's, but...
Alfred Molina and Eddie Redmayne were in the original on the Broadway production.
And, yeah. And I just loved the language of the play. I'm fascinated by words and putting them together and making sense of something, and how his turn of phrase is so fantastic. And I was attracted to the fact that he's a genius. He's a brilliant man, and he's got a facile mind. And but he's also emotional. You know, he has a real emotional life. He's a hermit, basically. People knew very little about him. I also loved the fact that there was nothing online anywhere of him doing anything, because he was a painter, so he never went on anything and did anything. So I had 7 seconds of him speaking. That's all I could find.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's what I had to go on.
Do we know, and I remember looking this up after I saw it, but I don't remember what I found. But as far as the, obviously the commercial commission is true. Was working with his assistant, was that based at all on truth?
David, talk to that.
Well, yeah, he had assistants. I think this character is a, you know, kind of a conglomerate of a bunch of different people. They didn't last very long. I mean, Rothko was not the most generous as far as his temperament, you know, toward... especially somebody that's going to be an assistant that's coming up, and, you know, he wants to keep them in their place. But it's not, from what we know, it's not based on a specific human being like the character Rothko is so specific, yeah.
Right, one relationship that he had with this person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
But what makes a, as you talked about that mind, but actually your character David sort of figuring out that mind, and then for the audience obviously trying to figure it out as well.
Yeah.
And then realizing, well, the artist hasn't really figured it out either is is really fascinating.
Well, I also think it deals with the delusional aspects of art and people's connection to their own artistic expression. And I think that that's what Rothko learns, is that he really believes that the Four Seasons restaurant will be an ideal place for his work and has every justification for it. He's in utter and complete denial about it. And Ken is the one who turns his head around and goes, look at this. I mean, look at what you're talking about here. Can you imagine what this is going to be like? And then he goes to the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
And then he sees it for himself, and then that's the end of that. But Ken is the one who gets him into that space because he realizes that it's delusional. Mm-hmm. And artists do that. You know, they can be delusional and not very self-aware. I mean, how many... You know, lots of artists do all sorts of things, and you think, "Oh, they shouldn't be doing this. Go to law school."
There's also that intersection of anger and brilliance.
Yes,
that I find fascinating.
Right, and I think that what I've discovered is that he is never angry at Ken. It's always about his own frustration.
Well, how could you be angry?
Well, you know, I think that there have been productions where that's the case, but it's not. It's such a fine line where it's internal. It's not. I mean, he lashes out at him, but at the same time, he it's about him and it's about his reaction to his own work. And then when Ken has his moment in the sun, as it were, and he nails Rothko, it's quite wonderful because it's sort of cathartic for both of them. Rothko mm-hmm. really hears what he says.
Because at the beginning of the play, the Rothko says, well, I'm not your teacher.
Yeah.
But very much is.
Right. And he's a shrink. He becomes a shrink. He becomes his father. He becomes his teacher. Yeah. He becomes his friend. All the things he says he's not in the beginning of the play happen by the end of the play.
Yeah. And this is a guy who wants to be understood.
He wants to be significant. Yeah. He doesn't want to be understood. And he doesn't want to be liked. He doesn't care about being liked. He's more interested in his work. And his paintings are children, and he has to protect them. And he is interested in being significant, not being liked. And I think that's a real distinction.
Mm-hmm. And to have that, and the whole thing about the commission, I worry about giving too much away here, but the fact of that commission, of that it's, you know, something just in the. You know, you don't want it to be something just in the background.
No, you don't. And he took it very
seriously.
And he
doesn't want to be something just in the background.
Yeah, he did not. And no one should look at, actually, just the opposite. He tells us several times in the play, I want to create a place where the viewer can contemplate the work over time, which is exactly what he did in Houston with his chapel.
With the chapel.
Yeah.
And it's stunning, you know. It's a great play. And that's what he really wanted, not the Four Seasons restaurant.
And there's that whole question, obviously, I mean, why it's called red, of what does that, just what does that mean? What does it mean of color? What do you mm-hmm. see? And that's what you get to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so much more than just, you know, we go into the specifics of different shades of red and things like that. And, you know, it's so, like he said, it's about Rothko's work. It's not about people, he doesn't care about people liking him. He's that word fear that people won't have any interest in his work anymore, and so he wants to make this place, and that the black and these other things will swallow the red, and it won't be there anymore. Yeah.
The scene where the you mentioned it early on, but that furious canvas painting scene is guttural and so striking
primal and
it's. But to work that out and to get that down, what was that like for the two?
Well,
we took a
painting class, and which from Tony, pronounce his last name. Tony, do you remember? I don't know. At the Albany Art Center, mm-hmm. Center for the Arts.
Yeah,
he was fantastic.
Amazing.
And we choreographed a little bit. We had Susan Caputo came in and worked with us, and that was great, mm-hmm. and gave us sort of a shape to the. It's done to a classical piece of music, actually, a Vivaldi, one of the Four Seasons movements, and it's actually turned out to be quite stunning. But the most important objective is that we paint this rather large canvas. I mean, it's large.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 9 feet and by 8 feet yeah. or whatever it is. It's big. And,
it's not
and,
easy.
Yeah. yeah, it's not easy.
It's a little bit of a workout.
It's a little bit of a workout. Yeah. And we have 3 minutes to do it, just under 3 minutes to do it. And we know that going in, so we have to just get it done. But we'd still manage to do a little, you know, our little back and forth. It's like, it's kind of like, to me, it's like dolphins, you know?
Yeah.
Swim.
Because you want it to, I mean, obviously you want it to look good for the audience, mm-hmm. and but also let them into that process.
Right.
And then you want the final.
Right. And he always painted the top. Rothko painted the top, and his assistants painted the bottom. And there's a lot of stuff in the biography about him and about these things that are very specific that obviously John Logan knew these things and put them in the play. I mean, you know, so it's stunning.
Mm.
It's a great piece of writing, and I'm so happy that John Logan came back from Los Angeles, where he wrote, you know, the screenplay for Skyfall and Hugo and The Aviator, and he was a screenwriter.
And now he's doing the Bette Midler,
yeah,
the
doing plays. Yeah, he's got another Tony nomination for best play, right?
Right. Yeah, I think so. I know that.
I'll eat you first. What's it? Yeah, I love that. I'll eat you last.
Yeah, Sue Mangers.
I love it.
The show got snubbed, unfortunately.
It
but,
did.
Yeah.
By the Tonys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. The play it was not nominated for best play. Exactly. And Bette Midler wasn't nominated for best actress.
Oh, that's
which,
crazy.
It does. It is crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Those people down there are nuts.
Yeah.
I live there, and I'm
theater people.
Theater people, they're crazy.
Doesn't make any sense.
Can't live with him, can't live without him. They're all crazy.
But it's but the language is gorgeous. Because I read the play, you know, once you see it and then you read it afterwards,
yes.
and the language is beautiful in that
yeah.
show.
And people say to me every show, I have no idea how you learned that. How did you learn that? And the answer to that question is, I don't know.
Yeah.
The human mind is a strange place.
Well, that's for both of you. I mean, because it's set up, I think, as a lot of question and answers, I guess, because it has a structure and a form.
Yes,
and,
it does.
Yeah. But
and a shape, a great shape.
Beautiful shape.
Yeah.
But still, that doesn't make it easy.
No.
You know, I don't want to
sometimes
undermine
it. Makes
it
a little bit harder. It's a lot of back and forth, one-word little exchanges, so it's quick and the pace goes, and then you go on this speech for a while and in a good way to the point. And it,
right.
It's amazing how
I think that for both of us, the listening quotient is terribly
yeah.
high because we have to.
Yeah.
I have to really hear what he's saying to me, or I have... I'm lost in my response. I mean, it's
yeah.
so it's organic, but it's yeah. like really listening. And I find David does as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like we are like listening to it. We're like rowing together. You know, we're like or sailing or something out there. It's like I need him. He needs me. That's it. We have each other. That's what we have to grab onto.
And not to get overly psychological here, but do you Do you purposefully avoid the okay older actor younger actor of learning from you in the sense of the rehearsal? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I think that I mean I think inherently just with he has a lot more experience than I do as actors. So, you know, abstracted from the play, I think that. Yeah, I've learned a lot from him just by being around him. And I think maybe the structure and what we're doing in this play has helped that just because of the nature of what we, you know, when we're in rehearsal, we're in this mode all day and then it kind of carries over in its own way. But I think also as well, though, we see each other in our own respects as equals as well, though.
Oh, yeah,
you
definitely.
Know?
I've learned a lot from David. I think that for me, I mean, having gone to drama school in the 70s, life was different in the 70s. They taught.
Oh, really? I heard that.
Yeah, I know. Certainly, theater training
weird
was
stories.
So weird.
Theater
yeah.
training was different
yeah.
in the 70s. There was a lot of methody things going on, and people were doing clowning and all this other stuff. And I mean, David has done a lot of that, but he's also had experience sort of in the contemporary theater in some way. And I, you know, being of the age that I am. It's not, and I think it's really interesting, and I find that you come to the same kind of conclusions, but we come at them very differently in some way. I mean, I'm highly technical as well.
Right.
And I think David is highly technical as well as emotional, as well as try to do that sort of, you know, actor studio thing where it's has, I have to have a connection to it and there has to be truth. And I think David feels that way too, and and finds it on a nightly basis. But it's interesting how for me watching him having been trained in the in the 21st century. I mean, I know I'm aging myself terribly, but I mean, really, that's what it is. It's like just like any art.
Sure.
It's like any art form. It changes, it morphs, you learn from the past, to surmount the past, you must know the past, you know, and you go, and I'm just fascinated watching him.
Kevin Maguire and David Kenner star in Red at Capitol Rep. It plays through May 19th, and you can find out more at capitalrep.org. Capitalrep.org. I love the show, and I can't wait to see the two of you in it. It'd be a real pleasure.
And I understand the reviews have been sensational.
Absolutely sensational. I have not read a bad one. And if there have been bad ones, then I think they've been expunged from the record. So it's good.
No, they haven't. It's so, that paywall
good.
Thing.
Yeah, excellent.
It's that you have to actually buy the paper. What a concept.
Kevin and David, you're the best. Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.